here we are. We're back. Another episode of Beyond the Grassy Knoll. And with us today is somebody I'm going to bet most of you have not heard of. I'm going to guess. It's been some time since I spoke to her. We've never done a show together, but we're acquainted with one another for, I guess, about 5 or 6 years. Her name is Barbara Hartwell Percival. A lot of you will know her only as Barbara Hartwell. She has a website, and that's barbarahartwell.blogspot.com. And so it's been some time, but Barbara, it's good to talk to you again, and I'm glad we finally did this kind of like for real on the air.
Well, I appreciate that, Keith. You know, I heard from you by post, actually, because I don't even have a public email address, and we haven't spoken. I think it's longer than 5-6 years. I think it's more like 7 years or
yeah.
so. Long
yeah,
time.
Be. Yeah, 2002 seems like that might have been it.
Yep, that was it.
And the reason I wrote you is because I would think about you periodically. I would check the website. Something happened, obviously. You can talk about that as well. But, again, I went back, as I guess I just do periodically, and I saw that you had the Blogspot up, and I started reading through it. And as I told you, with some of the – I mean, you have your opinions, and there's reasons why. But I sat there, and I went, yep, oh, yeah, yep, mm-hmm. And I said, you know what, I got to try to get a hold of her. And I did have to send you something snail mail to do it. And what I wrote in there, and that is when we had that long conversation back in 2002, you shot straight and said some things that I was having a problem with because I was kind of a newbie and naive as heck. And as time went on, you were much, much more right than wrong, if you ever were. And so I said, look, I'd just like to talk to you to say thanks for once. And also, can we talk about, especially in this first episode, about the way things, I mean, you were there with this alternative media thing from the very beginning. I jump in later, and I really don't have that much of a history. I only started listening to GCN, I'd say, middle of 2000 and not all that much, and then I got into it heavily in the beginning of 2001. Nothing to do with 9/11, just certain things kind of just got construed that I would start listening, and that's where I began. Now, I tell you what, I've said a whole lot, but if you would, Barbara, tell us as much as you want to about yourself and what you saw on the
okay.
way to the revolution.
Well, I think, Keith, I think I should begin with the fact that, you know, I'm long time in media, print media, and also electronic media, radio and TV, and I started out with that when I was still in CIA. I mean, my programs were sponsored by CIA, and of course they were propaganda type things, but so I have a long history in media, and when I got out of CIA in 1994, I continued in media, but I was more, of course, in what they call the alternative media,
right?
Which I hate that term, by the way, Keith. They're just as bad as I have discovered. They are just every bit as bad, every bit owned, lock, stock, and barrel. Because a lot of these alternative media radio stations and websites and all that, they're government, you know, controlled opposition. I'm sure you've heard that term, right?
Yeah. But let me just interject this one thing, because this is the way most people start and some people never change from. When I first heard them, they all said they were Christian. I'm like, okay, they wouldn't lie. They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't do that. And when I started the show, I had a partner who had been around a little bit and said, you know, you're being naive about this. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. So I came in with the idea, which I've certainly found differently, that whatever they said went, they're trustworthy, and I gave them a blank check. Big mistake.
Well, you know what, Keith? You know, it's like saying, to the pure in spirit, all things are pure. And I do know you, Keith, even though we haven't spoken in a long time. And I always knew that you were a Christian. I always knew that you were a straight arrow. And so what you may interpret as being naive, you were giving the benefit of the doubt
yeah.
to people.
Mm-hmm.
You were assuming, and of course falsely, but you didn't know that.
Right.
You were assuming that people were honest, that people were that called themselves Christians were believers in the gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's my idea of a Christian. And there's a certain behavior code that goes along with being a Christian. You know, I'm not into this. I'm not a rabid fundamentalist or a literalist or legalist. I'm interested in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you know, the way that you treat others and being honest and having integrity. To me, that's a Christian.
Well, as I said, I can understand how other people still hang in there and believe everything they hear. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I found out firsthand because I had dealings with, and I'll say it straight, I mean, GCN and certain people there, mm-hmm. and I found out differently. And I stopped listening probably in 2004, and I said, you know, I can make my way by myself. I don't need this anymore. And that's pretty much the way it stayed. But let's go back, I mean, is there such a thing as a beginning, and what would it be, and when would that happen?
A beginning, can you be more specific, please?
Yeah, to like this whole, what we would call, you know, for lack of better terms, and there really aren't any,
okay.
Alternative patriot, alternative, blah, blah, blah.
Alternative patriot movement. Well, it goes back pretty far, Keith, as far as I know. I mean, when I was still inside CIA and when I was working in other things, other areas, I was in psychological operations, which is known as PSYOPs, you know.
Right.
But I saw a lot of stuff that was happening in that area. So you figure if I got out in 94, if I go back even as far as like let's say the late 80s or the mid to the late 80s.
Okay.
It was still sort of building up, but it had not achieved the popularity as it has. And of course, after 9/11, it exploded. There were people that had no idea about the government corruption and the shadow government and, you know, all this stuff. And when 9/11 happened, it was like a wake-up call for those people. But I'm talking about before that, you know.
Let me ask you this, because I think this factors in too, and I've shared this. Growing up, I mean, I was born in 51.
Me too.
All right, so growing up in Pleasant Valley Sunday,
uh-huh.
I believe my parents really, they raised me right, but unfortunately, you don't realize that nobody else is playing by the rules. But
mm-hmm.
I heard things throughout my life, saw things related to government, or I'll give you a real quick one, okay? And this is about you, not about, you know, my anecdotes. But, you know, I had somebody grab me when I was growing up and telling me about World War II and how, for instance, the grunts knew that the thing was rigged, that the Allies couldn't bomb certain things. And I'm like, why isn't that in my history textbook?
Mm-hmm.
But I forget about it. I figure the guy's a kook. I go on with my life. And then other things happen and things we don't question. Like my friend's saying, why is there lobbyists? Isn't that bribery? Oh, no. They're lobbyists. You know, so what I'm saying is all through that time, something wasn't really right, but you go on with your life. You have certain stages. But when 2000 and 2001 came, a half century later, all of a sudden, I realized I got to take a look at this. So let me ask you, growing up, same year as myself, did certain things hit you and like, you know, stick with you and like that isn't what we were learning about in school?
Well, it was a different situation, Keith, and I'll tell you why. Because I came out of a CIA family. I still have family members in there to this day. So it was military intelligence and CIA, and I was recruited into all this bad stuff when I was still a child. So I did not have a normal childhood, and as a consequence, I knew.
You knew.
I knew, yeah, and of course, a lot of things were covered up because I was manipulated terribly, you know, of course. But I always saw through it. I can tell you that because God gave me gifts of the Spirit. I've always had that. I've always had the ability to see this in the Spirit, you know. And I would see an injustice or a wrongful thing, and I fought against it. And I'm talking about since I was a child. So, I take this as something that God put me here to do. I'm talking about exposing criminality in the government and injustices, corruption, all that. I've always had a sense of it. So I didn't have the experience that you had. I didn't really have a childhood, if I can say
right.
it that way.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
But
right.
I'm aware, you know, Keith, I'm aware, you see, that because I've known a lot of people in my life, and a lot of the people did have a so-called normal childhood. And I think it's probably much more painful for those people when they have to change their view of the world. And some people are in deep denial, as I'm sure you know. I'm sure you've had the same experience, yeah. Keith, as I have, where you tell somebody one of these stories, and I tone it down sometimes because I know that they're going to think, this woman is nuts. She's bizarre. Her stories are too bizarre. I have had people say things like, oh, this doesn't happen. That doesn't happen in America. Oh, no, that's not happening here. And they're in denial, and they need to wake up.
Well, that is true. But, you know, I tell you, and I found this interesting because I found it mostly with older people. I guess when others, whom I met, I'll even say my in-laws, for instance, 60, 70 years old, we talked about stuff, and at least they gave me a little slack, and we would go back and forth across time, and, you know, they saw stuff too. And I think everybody, as they get older, realizes they overlooked a lot of things, I guess, because it's more comfortable. But then when somebody brings it out, they realize, too, that by all means, as we like to say, it is a conspiracy.
Well, absolutely, Keith. And I'll tell you something. The people that I have most enjoyed knowing in my life, with whom I have the most in common and who do understand, I have found they're the older military The older military people, like the World War II veterans, and there's not a lot of those left now, you know, but even that came after World War II, like the Korean War and others, people who've been in the military have had an opportunity to see something from the inside, maybe not deeply from the inside like in the intelligence community, but they've seen enough. And those people tend, in my opinion, to be truly patriotic. I mean, really patriotic, even though they have seen the corruption and certainly the way they were treated when they returned from the military, you know, if they're not career military.
Let me run something by you if I could. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because of what you were saying about the CIA, you'll understand why I'm bringing this up, and also as it relates to my experience. And I'm going to ask you what you think this was about. I'm trying to put this book together entitled While I Slept. And I'm thinking about every single incident that happened that didn't make sense to me, but I just shelved it. And the first one I can remember is being 5 or 6 and attending, you know, these Christmas parties for the families where they give you cherry Cokes and tell you to go down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come up for a refill, and my uncle, 6'6", would start to get the glow on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, I think what are those, the 4 stages of inebriation?
Okay.
What is it? What is the first one? It's Jocose. I don't know, Jocose.
I'm not really familiar with that, but.
No, but I mean, what
I
happened?
I get your meaning, Keith.
What happened was he finally got to the point where it came to lachrymose, where you start to get.
Oh, a crying jag.
And you start to, right. And you
okay.
Now, dig this. He was in the OSS. And we're talking about 1957 now. And I would come up, and I remember him holding court in the living room with the rest of my relatives with their jaws on the floor. And he would say, what we did was treasonous.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this. A guy that was in the OSS in 1957, 58, saying what they did was treasonous. Would you think there's a certain op that they were on that he might be referring to?
Oh, sure. Of course, you know, Keith, my grandfather, one of my grandfathers was OSS. And you know that CIA came directly, OSS was the precursor to CIA, which started in 1947, you know, with the Nazis that were brought over here from Project Paperclip. But absolutely, I mean, anybody that was involved in intelligence operations and had inside information in their heart, you know, in their heart of hearts, if nothing else, they know the definition of treason.
Right.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to guess, I'm going to ask you, your opinion, but I'm guessing he might be referring to the spiriting out of Germany of Nazis into this country.
That's what I, absolutely.
Okay.
That's what I just mentioned, Project Paperclip, you
All
see.
All right, yes.
I mean, because, and let's go into a little history here, Keith, if we could. the core of CIA, which officially started in 1947, was Nazi scientists and doctors, brought over here at the behest and the expense of the United States government under a project codenamed Paperclip. They were Nazis. And, you know, if you look at a lot of the experimentation that went on and the mind control things in the concentration camps, that was brought over here, too. And, of course, then you get MKUltra, you know, the mind government,
right.
CIA mind control program. And that's something that, unfortunately, I was subjected to as well. And it started in my childhood. And, you know, something I'd like to mention about that. There's a lot of disinformation and purposeful, you know, disinformation is a purposeful attempt by an agency of the government to do just what they say, disinform people, to provide a certain amount of truth, and then it's peppered with lies. The percentage varies. But a lot of what has been made public, about mind control, specifically the CIA's MKUltra program, it's disinformation. And that's the problem that I have faced. It has made me feel at times that I wish I'd never gone public because there's so much disinformation out there. It's to obfuscate the truth about the real black operations. And I can tell you that the purpose of the MKUltra program, it wasn't to create, quote, sex slaves. You've heard about that stuff, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was nothing like that I was ever involved in. And it wasn't to create sex slaves or anything like that. And I'm purposefully not going to mention any names of people on this program, Keith. I mean, I can mention a few good people. I'm not going to mention any disinformers or those kind of people. I'd like to keep the focus more positive and you know, mm-hmm. what can be done about this, okay?
Sure.
But anyway, you get these people out there, and it's a sideshow, basically. The real purpose of the MKUltra operation was to, quote, create the perfect spy. You know, somebody who could not supposedly be interrogated by a hostile entity, somebody who was under some kind of control so that the people, the handlers, thought they could keep control over the operatives. That's what it was really about.
An aside, stay right there with your timeline. Remember where you left off. I just want to ask you as a digression, because like I said, all this time's gone by and all these events have occurred, mm-hmm. and we've not spoken about them. But when you saw certain events take place, because I don't think they're assassins necessarily, but they seem to be foils or patsies for assassins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you see things like the snipers in D.C., when you see, I guess, a shooter like at Northern Illinois or Virginia Tech,
uh-huh.
does that resonate? Does that remind you of anything?
Well, yes. Yes, it does. But if you go back, let's just go back for a moment, before 9/11. If you look at some of the events that happened before 9/11, okay, like the bombing of the World Trade Center.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I think that was 1993, if I'm
correct.
Not mistaken.
That's correct, February.
Okay, stuff like that. All that stuff was government planned because they used it to usher in the anti-terrorism acts and all this stuff. These things were precursors because all this was planned long, long ago. I'm talking about Homeland Security, the Patriot Acts. All this stuff was drafted. Anybody who believes that these treasonous, this is high treason, Keith, these treasonous things just like, you know, came into being because of 9/11, anybody that believes that is an idiot. And I'm sorry to have to say it, but that person is an idiot. This stuff is long, deep, you know, plots and conspiracies that was leading up to the 9/11 so that they could clamp down the New World Order and the police state,
and I just want to say this ironically. I was living in Jersey when that happened, and I was driving on Route 80. I think you kind of know the lay of the land there,
mm-hmm.
Interstate 80, and at a portion where we're looking right at the trade towers. I mean, when you live in Jersey in Burton County, everywhere you go, the towers are over your shoulder with the Empire State Building.
Well, it's right across the river, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'm watching the towers smoking from the top, and I'm going, gee, somebody finally flew a plane into it. but it was the bombing. But what was interesting was, and I have it up on my website, the New York Times, I mean, wrote stories about this whole operation that was going on with this cell in Jersey City. Mm-hmm. And basically the FBI admitted in the New York Times that they let the thing go.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm going, why didn't I pay attention? Here you go again. 93, well, I'm not thinking.
I should say, Keith, that I am far from an expert on the 911. I haven't, you know, I probably know more about it than most people, but in terms of all the details and the investigations, I have not personally done that, so I'm not really equipped to go into detail.
Oh, no, but remember, this is the bombing in 93 that you brought up.
Yes.
That's
yes.
where the Times, and like I said, on my website are the three articles that I can't believe mm-hmm. I and so many New Yorkers and Jerseyites read and didn't faze us that the Bureau was in on it and let it go.
Yeah, I understand, because you were not prepared. You were not prepared to process that kind of information.
No.
You didn't have a format in which to fit that kind of information.
No.
And that's the truth, Keith, as far as to why most people don't know, because they've been indoctrinated. And it's a society-wide indoctrination. They've been indoctrinated into a lot of false ideas and a false belief in a system mm-hmm. that has, in fact, run amok. There's corruption more often than not in every government agency that I've ever known about.
Now, you had said you kind of knew what was going on early on.
Oh, yeah.
But whereas I had my little leave at the Bieber naivete. But
because
let me
you
ask you
came
this.
From a different background, Keith.
But how, I mean, you know? What was it like for you to go to, like, the junior high or high school? I mean, did you have to, like, shut your mouth or what?
Well, it was pretty horrible, actually, because I was really being controlled. You know, in other words, I was being controlled by these people. The mind control things had started when I was only a child. I mean, my training started when I was 3 years old, Keith. I mean, my father was involved in all this intelligence stuff and everything. And you know, I got military drills when at the age of three. I was taught to read and write at the age of three. I was taught to memorize maps of the United States at the age of three, starting. Where I had to put puzzles together and know the capitals of every state. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. But if you look at a genuine survivor of, for instance, MKUltra, you'll probably hear similar stories.
Yeah, in fact, we've had, and I have no idea what your take is on this, but there have been some people on who go by, well, Kathleen Sullivan was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know Kathleen. I haven't spoken to her in many years, but I do know her.
All right, and Maury, who had written the book Reflections in the Night.
That person I don't know.
And we've had a number of people on who deal on the clinical side of ritual abuse and know uh-huh. that there were especially some hotbeds for this uh-huh. kind of thing. And one of them, I'll just say to you, that was confirmed by a number of people without, and they don't know each other. Mm-hmm. And that was, and you can, I think you well can appreciate this, after World War II, where a lot of Nazi spooks hung out, was in southeast Pennsylvania, kind of masquerading as Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yes, yes. Well, you know something, Keith, I can tell you there's a couple of people that were involved from the beginning with this Nazi MKUltra stuff. And, I mean, there was one person who I'm sure you've heard of is Sidney Gottlieb.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nazi war criminal.
Right.
Sidney Gottlieb was one of my handlers. So, I mean, and look at the reputation he got. I'm not talking about in the alternative media, but he, if you, I have books right on here on my shelf written by supposedly exposés by ex-CIA agents, and I'm reading these books laughing. I mean, they're talking about as if this guy is some kind of a hero, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
Well, going back to what we had first started out with, unless you want to fill in some gaps, but going back to the alternative slash patriot cult, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess I lost
sight
of
that. Oh, no. I'm the one that did that. That's fine. I just wanted to bring us back because,
okay.
You know.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, let me start out, Keith, by talking about COINTELPRO. And probably your listeners have heard of COINTELPRO.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was very widely known about up until maybe 5-6 years ago. At least I didn't see anything much out there in the media, alternative or otherwise, about it. I'm talking about what people might have been aware of, okay? But the COINTELPRO, it stands for Counterintelligence Program. And it was initiated in 1956 by J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI. And basically, you know what they did, COINTELPRO, and it's still going on today. It's not the official, quote, COINTELPRO, but it's the same type operation. CIA had another operation very similar, Operation Chaos. It's basically, the purpose is to infiltrate any kind of group that is considered to be subversive against the government. COINTELPRO was heavily involved in infiltrating the Black Panthers.
Right.
Remember that?
Sure.
And, any kind of groups. They were also heavily involved in the Vietnam War protests.
Sure.
Okay?
Let me ask you one thing, Barbara. Do you remember, and the FBI kind of admitted this, with regard to the Black Panthers, it was just a tragic episode. Do you remember the actress Jean Seberg?
Yes, I do.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yes, I do.
I mean, they drove that woman so nuts
that
she committed suicide after interning her child, whom the FBI kept bugging her was a biracial child, the father of which would have been a Panther.
Keith, these people, these COINTELPRO people, they are, in my opinion, they are the minions of Satan. They are Satan's henchmen. They have no holds barred to destroy people. This is what they do.
That's their job, right?
That's their job. When they pick a target, and I'm one of the targets, and I have been for many years, so I have a very intimate knowledge of this type of operation. I should also bring up, I have a friend, a very good friend. In fact, he's my best friend. His name is Gerald Sosby. He's an ex-FBI agent. And he's an attorney, a Vietnam veteran, and he's also a whistleblower like me. He has been through hell, absolute hell, with what they've done to him and are still doing to him. And guess what his crime was, Keith? His crime.
Well, he must have told the truth about something.
Well, I'll tell you what his crime was.
Okay.
He was honest. He had integrity. He defended the constitutional rights of both suspects and agents in the FBI. He took his oath to defend the Constitution seriously. He was a straight arrow. He told the truth. He did the right thing. What they did to this person, I've written some articles on that, and it's on my, and he has some articles that I've published also on my website.
Give the URL out again, Barbara, if you would.
Sure. It's Barbara Hartwell, all one word, .blogspot.com. And the name of the website is Barbara Hartwell versus CIA. But anyway, I do have an article on there, one specifically. It's called Targeted for Terror, Ex-FBI Agent's Gruesome Ordeal. What they put this man through, it's unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. They basically forced him to retire from the FBI. You mentioned Gene Seberg. What they did is they threatened him. They threatened him with, if you have two choices, one is you can retire. If you don't go quietly and retire, we will put you in a mental hospital. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
They destroyed his marriage. Okay, they engineered, these people are put Machiavelli to shame, Keith. I mean, they engineer the breakup of personal relationships. They send false letters. In fact, in one case of the Black Panthers, I know that, and I don't want to name any of the names of the criminal FBI agents, although I do know them. I just won't do that right now. But in one case, they sent a phony love letter to the wife, to the wife of somebody, and then stating that there was an affair going on between these two people, and one got murdered because of it. the husband, I think the husband murdered the person that his wife was supposedly having an affair with. It was all false, designed by COINTELPRO.
All right, so they created an affair situation to which the other spouse responded in a jealous rage?
Yes, yeah. But the thing is that there was no affair going on.
Right, right.
They fabricated a phony letter stating to make this guy believe that there was an affair going on. So this is how they operate. They operate by subterfuge, sabotage, fabrications, libel campaigns. I mean, all anybody has to do, Keith, and I'm sure you know this, you put my name, Barbara Hartwell, into a search engine, and you'll come up with unbelievable stuff that these idiots, these government-sponsored, provocateurs have fabricated, about me. They say I'm CIA, I'm a CIA plant, I'm a disinformation specialist from the CIA, all this stuff, and nothing could be further from the truth.
The only reason I'm laughing is that it's so nice to hear someone else besides myself use the word idiot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is moronic. It's idiocy.
But it works.
Unfortunately. That's the problem, Keith. Yep. There was a time, and I've been out there, at least in the public, for quite a long time since I got out. I mean, I got out in 94, out of CIA in 94, and I started really going public in around 96, 95 or 96. I went to conferences, speaking lecture circuits, conferences, radio shows, and then I started getting involved in, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I heard a click.
So did I.
Maybe somebody's interested in this conversation.
Right, listen, I want to say something to you. Now, hold it right there.
Okay.
And I don't mean to spook you. And
okay.
Excuse the pun.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I go to punch in. I type in the URL, barbarahartwell.blogspot.com,
mm-hmm.
And I come up with this, supposed religious site in St. Petersburg. Has that ever happened to you? Has anybody ever said that happened?
No.
And I'm looking at the URL. I'm going, I spelled it right. What's with this site from St. Petersburg?
Oh, they do this stuff all the time.
Well, what I had to do is I figured, okay, so I went back in. I went into Google, and I popped in your name, and I looked at the one site that was obviously barbarahartwell.blogspot.com, and I got in. But I'm checking. I'm telling you, I checked and rechecked, and I'm like, what is going on here? And
they to play games, Keith. This is, to me, it's laughable. I mean, I can remember back when the technology wasn't as sophisticated as it is now, when it was cruder technology, they're still doing this, but they'll put echo chambers on my phone. They do it on purpose to harass me. If I'm speaking to somebody they don't want me to talk to, they'll put echo chambers on the phone lines. Anytime I mention something that they think is interesting, you hear clicks on the line. I mean, they do this stuff, and they do it on purpose,
Regarding harassment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Again, in the time that we've not spoken, I felt it was, I'm nobody's hero. I just felt it was necessary to give air to some folks who are apparently beating their head against the sky to try to make people aware that there is such a thing as electronic or psychotronic harassment.
Oh, God. Yeah. Keith, I can tell you this. In the past, I thank God that part of it has stopped for me. They don't do that to me anymore. But there were times, that they almost killed me. I mean, I literally had a near-death experience from this stuff. And one of the things that I want to bring out, because I'm so angry and outraged about this, is that my friend that I mentioned before, Gerald Sosby, mm-hmm. his site is Sosby, SosbeeVFBI.com.
All right, one more time again, slow.
Okay. Sosby, SosbeeVFBI.com. It's also a link on the front of my site. You can find it right there.
There's
a link.
Fine.
Okay. Okay, here we had it again. You heard that?
Well, if you're not burping on your end, I'm not burping on my end.
No, there was a click on the line.
I heard
again.
It. I know.
The idiots. Okay. Well, anyway.
Make that three.
this man, Gerald Sosby, as I said, he's my best friend. I've known him for 8 years, okay? 8 years. And what they're doing to him, what they're doing to him with these weapons, they are using, these are electromagnetic weapons. I am not a technical person. That is not my area of expertise. But I can tell you that I had to learn what I do know, which is not a lot in terms of the technical parts, but I do know what they are, what they're capable of. And they call them non-lethal, and that is a joke.
Yeah, it is. That's right.
Non-lethal. I've known people that have been blown apart,
yeah.
Literally blown apart, body parts blown apart by these, especially the pulse beam microwave weapons.
Sure.
And, you know, microwaves are very dangerous. All my life, I've never owned a microwave oven. I do not allow anybody to cook food for me.
Same here.
In a microwave oven. I mean, these things are weapons of destruction, mass destruction.
Well, convenience has that other element in it, doesn't it, these days?
Yes. Well, yeah. People don't understand the hazards. But what I'm telling you about my friend here, Gerald, I mean, I talk to him on a fairly regular basis. We usually talk on the phone, you know, and I've been hearing the same testimony from him for 8 years now. And they're literally killing him, Keith. You know, with these weapons, they never let up. It's like a 24/7. He's assaulted with these things, the whole thing sickens me. I've put as much publicity out as I can to let people know that this is going on, and it just seems like nobody cares. I mean, I understand there's not much anybody can do, maybe, but it just. You know, people hear about this and they say, "Oh, those are the tinfoil hat crowd or
that's
something."
That's right. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, it's made to be something that they try to make fun of it, like,
sure.
Oh, the people who are saying that they are being assaulted with, you know, electromagnetic so-called non-lethal weapons. Oh, those people are nuts.
Well, let me share something with you because it's ironic. For the month of January, I have been and I will be putting up some old shows. And one of the shows that's presently up there are two women, Eleanor White and Sue Ann Campbell, who are talking. Well, the title of the show is The Multi-Stalkers.
Yes, okay.
Now, what happened was it's a tough sell because most people are very skeptical. I understand that, listeners. And the thing is like, well, why them? But let me hold that for a second. What happened was I was put in touch with a family in Sacramento who became the objects of a local neighborhood. Long story short, they're Pakistani Catholics. But after 9/11, their neighbors who knew them all this time decided they became Arab Muslims.
So they were targeted, are
yes.
you telling me? Okay.
But here's the clincher. The two daughters are absolutely, you know, geniuses. They're both in law school now. If they're still there, they might be out. But these two ladies were nobody's fools. And when they came on and testified to what was happening to them out in Sacramento, now you've got a real hard time debunking that this is a fake.
Well, yeah, yeah. Okay, I agree. You see, most of the people who are targeted, I can tell you this, most of the people who are targeted, there's a reason, at least in the minds of the idiots, and that's what I do call them. I mean, in the minds of the criminals, government criminals, there's a reason. Nobody gets targeted without some kind of reason. And you see, anybody that will tell you, oh, it's a random experimentation and all that, no. The experimentation is long gone, long over. They target somebody because they're a target. I mean, they're considered in some way a threat, you know,
mm-hmm.
a threat. And also, you have to understand, too, that a lot of this weaponry, which was developed many years ago in R&D, you know, if you check the R&D records, research and development, in some of these defense corporations, this stuff is not just used by the government. It's privately owned. There's all kinds of, they're contracting out to private people, private citizens, and using these people to target other people. And I mean, that's that's what makes it so hard to stop or to pin down that it's the, quote, government, because they have a layer of buffers, between the top people who are actually ordering this stuff to happen, the chain of command, and then the people that are actually carrying out, the thugs that are carrying out the operations.
Well, you know what's sick also, and I haven't checked in about a year or two, I admit, but especially when these people were coming on, like the daughters out in Sacramento, California, like Eleanor White and others, and I'm sure you can still go to websites and buy some of this stuff, and just like what that family was experiencing in California, you can actually buy it off the internet and turn it on your neighbors.
That's right. That's right.
And I mean, that's sick, but that's...
Just like you can buy, I remember laughing. This is many years ago. I remember laughing, and it was when I was still inside, and somebody... I had mostly contract, independent, quote, contractor jobs. I was NOC, the NOC, which is non-official cover. But I remember one place that I had a temporary assignment there, and it was basically just a corporation, a place, And the guy, and this is not too long before I got out, but the guy says to me, oh, we're going to go down to the boss of the operation says to me, oh, we're going to... It was like a CIA front company. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Right.
The guy says to me, oh, we're going to be going down to Spy World in New York City. The company was in Connecticut, like Greenwich, Connecticut. But we're going to be going down to Spy World, and we're going to buy some equipment down there. And I said, well, I won't be going to Spy World. I told him, because I was a straight arrow even then, I said, I'm here to do a specific thing. And that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm not going to Spy World. And then I eventually told the people that were working for the corporation, okay, that I was there as a, quote, personnel counselor, okay, and so, in other words, the people would come in and talk to me about their problems. And I told the people the truth, and I said, what they're doing here at this corporation is against your rights. And I eventually quit. I said, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this. It's unethical. You see, but anybody, whether they're CIA or anybody else, yeah, they have the more sophisticated technology, but anybody, there's big, huge businesses that are raking in the bucks off all this technology that's designed to spy and sabotage and harm people.
And yet it's interesting, isn't it, in this day and age, where people, well, not everybody, but, again, as we were growing up, we always heard, sometimes in cocktail parlance, about, oh, Big Brother and Big Brother.
Uh-huh.
And never, without, nobody realized it was happening. So now you're in the age of cell phones that can videotape, and we're doing it to ourselves.
Well, yeah. Okay, and that's a good point, Keith. I'll tell you this right now. This is just my personal position. Okay, but I'm a very, very adamant defender of personal privacy. Of course, individual rights too, because personal privacy is a part of individual rights as defined in the Bill of Rights, Amendment 4, And the Supreme Court opinion that was issued about Amendment 4 is a reasonable expectation of privacy. No illegal search and seizure, on and on it goes, But in this society, people are doing it to themselves because the whole thing is designed to make a bunch of citizen spies. Instead of protecting privacy, we got surveillance cameras all over the place. People are documenting every aspect of their personal lives and then, sending it over the internet. I mean, I think it's a huge mass psychosis of this attitude.
But right now, I got to stop using that collective, but especially young people who have grown up and teethed on cell phones, basically, love it. They think this is the greatest thing. And truthfully, there's no reason why they should think there's a nefarious end attached to it.
No, because they're uninformed.
No, and again, we probably would have been the same way, but looking now, in the rearview mirror and what also is to come, obviously, we are surveilling ourselves under the aegis, I guess, or the umbrella of it being convenience, communication, whatever it is.
Yes.
But still in all, everybody's eyes are on everybody else.
Well, you know what, Keith? I can tell you now, I'm from the old school, and I'm very old-fashioned and conservative in many, many ways, but I can tell you that I have never owned a cell phone. I never will own a cell phone. I know you can triangulate anybody's position, through just carrying a cell phone. I don't have any illusions about privacy on the telephone. They're always on my lines. I can't stop them. I can't do anything about that. I'm not going to stop living my life or communicating with people. But in my case, most of the stuff I say about the government, most of what I expose is already public. I've made it public. So I don't really care what they hear. If they think I'm going to say anything truly sensitive on a phone line, then they're mistaken.
You know, and just what you said before about, well, here's what it reminds me of. When you were talking about Supreme Court legal cases or whatever, I was thinking about one of the justices who I think was really part of the problem, but he gave us a little wink and nod about the way things were going to be. Mm-hmm. And that was Louis Brandeis, who said, I guess the most cherished right for Americans is the right to be left alone.
Yes.
And that is the very thing that will never happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what, Keith? That phrase really rings a bell with me. I resonate to that phrase, is because of what I've been saying all these years, and it's the reason I don't have a public email address. It's the reason that, yeah, I'm public. I've gone out there and put out information on radio and print and lectures and all that. But what I always say to people is, all I want out of my life, aside from trying to do the right thing like I'm doing now, exposing information and getting it out to the public, but basically for myself, I just want to be left alone. The government has no right. I mean, they've already pretty much destroyed my life, and I don't say that lightly. They have literally destroyed my property for many years, cars, computers. They've interfered in every aspect of my life. And, of course, I worked for them for many years, and it wasn't even something that I chose for myself. But part of the whole idea, the founders of this country, what they had in mind was freedom from tyranny, government tyranny, as you well know, I'm sure, freedom from government tyranny, and that's what the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights is based on. And it's also, in my opinion, a very Christian ethic. I don't mean to offend anybody that's not a Christian, but, it goes along with biblical, ethics and principles.
Barbara, I would even argue, really, and we'll get into this some other time, but
okay.
Honestly, if we had stayed with the Declaration of Independence, we probably would have been better off than the Constitution, honestly.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of, let's not get into all the legal minutiae about that, because I'm aware of that.
That's
stuff.
Right, no problem.
But you know what, though, Keith? I still have to say that I have to describe myself. I mean, I'm well aware that the Constitution is basically been trampled and for many years, and it might as well be non-existent in terms of any use that it is to us now because of what they've done. But I still consider myself a defender of the Constitution because if the Constitution had been followed, okay, without getting into the legal stuff, okay, we're talking about like Amendment 16 or 14 or something, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're not getting into that. But basically, if you look at just the Bill of Rights and what it entitles people to, it's based not on rights are not issued by government. God gives the rights. It's bestowed by God. It's individual rights as bestowed by God. And I will support that and defend that until the day I die.
What I want to do, if this is okay, I'm not cutting you off about that, because, if you can come back again,
okay.
There's a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about. It's interesting as heck, and like I said, a lot of things have transpired in the time that we've not spoken. So if you're okay with that, I think it's valuable for also the listeners to hear, because again, a lot of them came in a lot later than I, and they have no idea what went before. But one thing I want to ask you about, if it's okay, because we'll get back to the Patriot media thing. That's not a big deal. I mean, we can always go there. And like I said, I'm the one that's allowed this to go digressive, and I have no apologies
well,
for that.
Well, you know what, though, Keith? I like the spontaneous approach.
No, but
that's,
I mean,
that's what I'm like, and I think that's what you're like, too. So.
Well, it's a conversation. This is a phone call. And it's okay. And I think everybody understands it's real. I mean, this isn't rehearsed. But here's something I want to throw at you, because this is another thing that popped up, again, since Liu last spoke, and that is, you remember talking about like MK Ultra and such?
Yes.
One of the things that blows me away, and I believe it was Condon who wrote the book Manchurian Candidate.
Yes.
But then they make that black and white movie, the mm-hmm. first version.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought they were pretty faithful, and I cannot believe what that movie was stating.
Yes.
And then then when you look at like a Lee Harvey Oswald later or other supposed lone gunmen. It's like, did not anybody understand what was happening here? This bit about the Manchurian Candidate
well,
is real.
Well, you know, Keith, that's interesting because there's a real deep connection that I have to that movie, actually, too, and that is that my father, who was military intelligence, and he was stationed in the Philippines, and he was also connected to CIA, but my father worked on that movie, and he was very good friends with the director of that movie, Ilya Kazan.
Right.
And some of the other people, probably Frank Sinatra. And the connections go very deep. There's also another person that I grew up knowing who was involved with that movie, and his name is David Amram. He's a composer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
His music was used there. These were all family connections that I had, Keith, from way back. And I do know that that movie is based on fact, and actually, I think the movie was banned, wasn't it?
All right, now this is what I got. And that Sinatra tied it up for quite some time.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. they said it was because of his I guess devotion to Kennedy. But what's also interesting, and we've talked about this in a prior show in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
What's so kind of spookily bizarre is that Sinatra was also in a movie, if you remember, called Suddenly, where he was a presidential assassin. Now, I'm not saying that he had in any way, shape, or form anything to do with anything,
mm-hmm.
but that is just such a weird situation.
Well, Keith, I can tell you right now that a lot of these celebrities, these Hollywood celebrities, and especially ones that were connected to the mob, CIA and mob are hand in glove, and they have been for many years. You probably know that, too, but, as I said, growing up, I knew a lot of these people, or people connected to them. They're all hooked into each other, and so you don't find coincidences. You find reasons. Maybe somebody will say, "Well, my reason for doing this is such and such," but in fact, it is a much deeper reason that goes down deep politics.
Last question for this time, because we've got about 6 minutes left. This is probably an unfair question to ask at this late juncture, but also it's not a bad springboard if we get together for a second hour. And this is what I want to run by you. Myself and those around me have done a certain amount of research, or at least kicked around the idea of Hollywood and entertainment in general, TV, whatever, being involved in predictive programming where they're kind of telling you what's going to happen, but it's kind of veiled, and you don't really get it, and then all of a sudden you realize, I don't believe they said that.
Of course.
Now, Manchurian Candidate's a good example of it, and Barbara also, I got involved with somebody else who found a lot of images in movies and TV shows about 9/11, about the numbers themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, that's another topic for another time, but suffice it to say, when I look back at certain movies, I watched The Fight Club the other night, and they're watching the Financial District of New York being imploded.
Mm-hmm.
And the towers were definitely involved with it. I think they even called it Ground Zero.
There's no doubt. I can tell you right now, there is no doubt that Hollywood, Hollywood is owned. I guess to use the most general phrase I can use is New World Order. I mean, Hollywood is owned lock, stock, and barrel, just like any other media is owned. And they certainly, use this to indoctrinate people, to spread propaganda. In fact, one of the things, if I have a couple more minutes,
I'd like to say is absolutely.
That, most people, I'd say the average Joe out there, you ask them, well, what's the function of CIA, And, they'll say, spying and intelligence work and all that. And that's certainly true in part. But actually the biggest function, from my experience, and certainly part of the thing that I was heavily involved in, is CIA owns journalists and media propaganda. It's a propaganda ministry more than anything else. And certainly any Hollywood, which is the biggest part of the industry, entertainment industry, could never escape being in thrall to CIA, because CIA is probably the most well-established intelligence agency in this country. It's not the biggest, you know. It may not be the most powerful, but it's certainly entrenched, you know.
Well, we always thought that CIA was directed outward, and you realize, no, it's not.
Both. They have, Keith, you know, one of my favorite phrases, because I was involved in a lot of this stuff myself, but, you know, we all know that CIA is supposed to be accountable to the President of the United States, all right? But they have what I would call domestic covert
operation.
Domestic illegal or unlawful, whichever term you prefer, illegal or unlawful domestic covert operations. And certainly MKUltra was one of those, and many, many others, including the media propaganda. This stuff goes deep. And even if you take some of the, you know some of the tabloid papers like The Globe or The Star,
right,
or those things like that, those are all fed. You know, they're all fed. Even the most bizarre stories about the aliens and all this other stuff, a lot of the stuff in those tabloids is actually partially truthful, which peppered with disinformation and propaganda, and the source of it is CIA. I mean, that's well known among people that have worked for the agency.
No, I have no problem with that. And lastly, I just want to say, too, what I thought was very interesting was, first of all, honestly, Fox Network has had some very provocative shows on The X-Files, mm-hmm, Millennium. Mm-hmm. The X-Files especially, I think, said and told you a lot, except that it was brought to a ludicrous degree, and so everybody said, oh, that's just baloney.
You know, Keith, I can tell you this right now. No, I can tell you right now that from my own personal experience and other people that were involved in black operations, military or intelligence black operations the way I was, that some of us have had some of these experiences that the next thing we know it's on The X-Files, okay? Next thing we know, it's on one of these things, and that's a purposeful thing, you know. It's a purposeful thing.
Sure.
It's really unbelievable when you think about it, because a lot of the stuff that I was involved in, and probably we can cover this maybe next interview,
sure,
next time. But I was heavily involved in the paranormal, you know, the paranormal,
sure,
sector too, and that's certainly X-Files material, isn't it?
Well, and what I found interesting was, and I think this was the purpose, to a certain degree, for a while I thought it was very good entertainment. It got a little woohoo, but I mean,
yeah, yeah.
But I thought what it did was, for those who are probably leaning a little bit to saying, you know what, I really think there's something going on out there, if they were watching The X-Files, they would find that, but then what would happen is they would spin that to a point where, and this is what I was saying, the person that was kind of on the fence would go, ah, it's all fiction. And
that's
it's not.
Right.
And I have to tell you, at the beginning, we bought the Millennium series, the 3 years.
That I haven't seen.
Oh, but I mean, what I cracked up about, and I got to rip the audio and play it, was they interviewed an ex-FBI agent who basically said that the Millennium Group was real because certain federal agents never stop being federal agents. And
yes,
they're a group that has to take care, yeah, of a situation. And I guess that he was intimating outside the parameters.
Oh yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you know what? They call it off the books, Keith, and there's so many operations like that. I mean, that most of the stuff that I was involved in, off the books. You know, in other words, it's not documented. There's no congressional oversight. It's deep black funding. You know, like black operations. That's where it came from. Black budget. You know,
right.
And absolutely, there's organizations out there that are government organizations that people don't even know the names of, have never heard of. In fact, the NSA, up until, God, maybe even 8-9 years ago, there were a lot of people, I used to laugh because they'd call it no such agency, And people, the average citizen out there, what's the NSA? What's that? They've never heard of it.
Yeah.
That was, of course, years ago. But it just goes to show, I mean, most of what's going on is covert.
Yes, exactly.
Most people do not know about it, have never heard about it. And if they did hear about it or learn about it and ever gave it credibility, there'd be riots in the streets.
One would think, but, you know, who knows at this stage what the American psyche is about. Maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't, but we're up out of time. We've been talking with Barbara Hartwell Percival. This is the first time we've spoken in quite some time. And Barbara, you know, I hope you'll come back and we can discuss a lot of things.
Oh, I'd love to, Keith. It was an honor to be on with you. Thank you.
All right, listen, stay right there if you would, because I want to talk to you after we bid the listeners goodbye. And folks, again, this has been the Grassy Knoll. Beyond the Grassy Knoll, remember, and we'll see you down the road. Thanks a lot, folks. We'll talk to you soon.